truth bomb alert.
This is Pure Decking, show number 188. This is the show about stuff that interests me. For what the hell is today? December the 3rd, 2015. I should make it confusing and try to sound all biblical, like the year of our Lord. But then I'd like get hit by somebody, I'm sure.
What was the advent of computing?
Well, according to the Unix epoch, it was in the 70s. But
well, start your dates from then. It's yeah.
Yeah, we're just going to start giving all times in relative to the Unix epoch, which I have to look up now, which I'm sad to admit I have to look up because I don't remember when it is. January 1st, 1970. Okay, I was close. I said the 70s.
And well, start dating it from that.
It wouldn't be the year of our Lord. It would be the year of our overlords.
In the year the machines first gained sentience. Oh, shit.
In this year of the machine.
So, I'm drinking 151. I've realized I've made a horrible mistake and that 151 is the only liquor I have left in the house right now. But I'm going to be drinking 151. And since I've been sick all week, hell, can't hurt. And so since we jumped right into stupid jokes, I forgot to do the intros. Madman, what are you drinking?
Goose Island Festive Lager. It's hoppy with caramel barley in it. So it's hoppy. That's pretty much my description of it. I'm not buying it again.
Would you define that as festive?
No. I would define it as hoppy. I don't feel like partying drinking this.
Bob, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Naked Grape Unoaked Shiraz.
Fancy. Wait, is that a box wine?
Nope. Not
okay.
This time.
Fancy.
Not that it is like an $8 bottle of wine.
It came
there's
from
nothing
a box.
Wrong with boxed wines. There's really not. Drink what you like. I just, you know.
Box a lonely lady. It's called Lonely Lady.
Is that what you're drinking? Are you as a box of lonely lady, or are you just drinking a lonely lady?
No. Unfortunately, I'm drinking water right now. But give me 2 hours.
Well, you're in Australia, so I mean, the water down there might as well be.
Get some of the cleanest water in the world.
Near you?
I know.
Slightly radioactive.
Yeah. Only slightly radioactive, you know.
Well, that probably makes it cleaner, truthfully.
Plenty of that beautiful fluoride in it. You know, I can't get enough of that loving fluoride. You know, because hell, what could be a heavy metal toxic waste not be bad for you in the water?
Our water is self-sanitizing. I mean, so.
Hey, a fish fucking it. Why not drink it?
So
hey, that's just added protein there, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Fish going ahead and throwing these links in IRC in the chat room here. We were talking about it earlier, though, in that my source is Vice, and we did find some excellent commentary on YouTube about Vice.
The Zionist media-controlled Vice News.
So let's just keep that in mind. This is from motherboard.vice.com. That is the source of these articles. Of course, it's being talked about all over the place. The reason I'm using Vice is because they claim they're actually talking to the guy who hacked VTech. And apparently they've been caught faking interviews before, so I mean...
No!
They're really talking to him.
They're talking to someone.
You have to remember...
The Zionist media-controlled Vice News.
You know, that seemed like a fucking great idea in pre-show. Now I'm starting to think about it.
It's like, wait, we gave Morps free reign to start playing with the soundboard again. Oh, damn it. Remember them early decades?
Could be worse. Could be talking 3D printing.
You know...
Don't argue.
You know... I have been trying to 3D print most of my Christmas presents this year, and it's going well so far. I'm just...
You fucking tight-ass Jew.
Tight-ass nothing. These are unique.
It's not a bug. It's a feature, Grandma.
These are... well, handcrafted isn't the right word.
This is from the handcrafted techniques of the ancient Mopsin people.
So, I built the printer. Does that count?
I built the thing that built your inflatable sex doll.
You can see the classic Toyota 1971 lovingly handcrafted by the good people in Japan. It's a native craft of theirs.
Wow. So... Sorry. Anyways, back to this guy. So VTech has apparently been popped for something like 6.4 million accounts, and it was specifically an app store on VTech that was for these tablets that they market to children. And
children.
These are tablets that have like games on, you know, low-rent iPads, right? But, you know, they have like games on them that are meant for little kids and a chat program that so your parents can chat with you through your tablet. And I could actually see, you know, families using this, especially if you have a parent who works all the time or they're in the military or something. But, yeah, so let's see. According to the article here, a hacker broke into the servers of VTech, Hong Kong-based company that makes internet-connected gadgets and toys. Inside the servers, the hacker found the names, email addresses, passwords, and home addresses of 4.8 million parents and the first name, genders, and birthdays of more than 200,000 kids. So, yeah. Now, they're talking to the guy who's saying that he was doing this, trying to point out a security flaw, and that he doesn't intend on releasing this data. I kind of hope, because identity theft using children takes years to figure out. We were going around and around about the legalities of it, and whereas the credit card companies should do due diligence to make sure that they're not handing out credit lines of credit to minors, I'm not certain that they do. Especially, if you're getting one of their offers, I'm sure that it's vetted, but... If you're going to them, I don't know, man.
All right. When it comes to the vetting process of credit card companies, how many people know a cat that has been issued a line of credit?
I know one.
Well, there was that one you did as a prank.
That's the one I know of.
That is awesome.
Did you get one of those pre-offers for a cat?
Yes.
Nice.
What was the cat's name?
Oh, Geist.
Oh, okay.
But you just start filling out pets' names on those discount card applications for, like, I don't know, Starbucks, wherever you get your just little scannable discount card. They sell that information to whomever. So, yeah, right. A pet. My, dog growing up used to get offers from Marlboro.
Ah!
Nice. How many a day did your dog smoke?
None, but Marlboro was doing this miles campaign. You collect pretty much proofs of purchases off the side of a cigarette, and you could redeem it for some pretty cool shit. My parents were like carton a day smokers, so they got camping gear, all kinds of cool shit. And they limited the number of miles, the number of those coupons you could redeem between years. So every calendar year, they changed their packaging a little bit and said you can only use so many of the old ones. Well, they had so many tacked up that my sister and I were both submitted order forms, orders when we were like 7 and 8. My Beagle, whatever. So I've been getting targeted advertising from cigarette companies since I was 8. They sent me a scratch off to win something once. I got a Marlboro neon sign. I was really hoping for a Harley Davidson.
Yeah, they sent him a Harvey Danielson.
So there's no vetting when it comes to getting a credit card number.
So, like, what would be the legal repercussions if one were to, like, fill out a credit card application for their pet and literally, like, dip their ink and paw, their paw and ink, and, like, put it on the paper as the signature?
If you were to do it, that's fraud. Now, if you were to sign up here,
is obviously by the paw print. Hello?
Yeah, yeah. So you would be charged with fraud. Now, the way you get around this is you sign up for those little discount cards and have the credit card company send your pet a credit card.
Right.
And then you could try to say that you're acting in the pet's interest when using it, but technically without the pet's consent, it's still fraud for you to use its credit card. And how are you going to prove that the dog gave you consent?
He looked at me and wagged his tail and smiled real, real big. And I knew he wanted me to buy that Xbox.
My inner dogkin told me that because I can communicate with him.
And you should be shot.
So,
look,
anyways,
it's documented on my Tumblr.
Back to this the VTech thing, it gets even worse than just the information. Apparently, when he got into their servers, he found 190 gigs worth of photos from their Kids
Connect. I think
that's
just what he managed to download.
Yeah. Apparently, he sent like 4,000 of them to Vice for verification. Let's see. Not just pictures. The server also contained chat messages exchanged between parents and their children. The oldest logs were dated from the end of last year, while the more recent ones were from November of this year. The server contained several audio files, appeared to be recordings of kids' voices, according to the hacker, and he apparently sent one file to the author. We're not going to play that, because I didn't check it beforehand, and if it's some kid talking to their parents, I don't want to play it, truthfully. But, okay, bad enough this guy broke into their servers. Why are they keeping all of this shit? I mean, the photos I kind of understand is probably some kind of a sharing service where the kid takes pictures with the tablet and you get them off the website or something. But the voice recordings and the chat logs, really? I mean, did they need to keep all that?
They're cloud backups. This is a feature.
I mean, did VTech learn nothing from Apple during the fappening? I mean, come on, you have to encrypt the backup photos.
You'd think.
Well, this
I
just shows
the fappening. We need that more often.
We need number two.
I for one am fully in support of cloud storage. Thank you, for fappening.
Yeah,
extremely
we need more celebrities
weak passwords
using these,
are great.
That's right. Suave needs more celebrities using these VTech children's tablets to take naked selfies.
Oh, God.
Somebody's got to do it.
It just means...
Nickelodeon just means a whole new thing to me now.
Oh. You mean it's going back to the original meeting? No, nobody's going to get that joke, are they?
No, I'm not going to go there.
Damn it, are you? We're old.
Hey, back in my day, MTV stand for music television.
Well, you know.
So, this just means, even if it's marketed to children, treat it as though you're handing them an iPad on the internet and teach them to be discreet with what they're doing.
Or better yet, why are you handing a toddler a tablet?
There you go. With connection to the internet.
Now,
another thing.
You know, I consider myself a technologist, so, among other things. But, in all honesty, you shouldn't let a kid touch a computer till they're like 10.
Good
like
luck with that.
I know.
Well,
I know.
No, a computer connected to the net, dude. Anything air-gapped is fine because you're in full control of what's on that machine as a responsible parent. If that thing constantly is air-gapped apart from you updating it or putting new stuff on there for the child, then that child runs zero chance of falling afoul of the law or the great hallmark of stupidity, which is the fappening.
Well, I'm just thinking more in terms of... understanding the world, because my first computer was a fucking Commodore 64, right? So I had to work to make it do anything. And that was like 6, 7. But yeah. Of course, no internet connection. And even then, I mean, you had to learn. You had to learn to peek and poke memory addresses to make it do anything, really, beyond the very, very basic text stuff. And, you know, assembler was pretty much okay. Assembler was beyond my grasp at that age. I'm not going to lie, but I tried, locked the damn thing up a few times, but I did at least try. But that's a little bit different than handing a kid a fucking iPad, where everything on it is a touch screen, and it's all hidden behind this veneer of fake reality of, you know, everything is happy and made of candy and all this other bullshit you see on iPads and Android tablets like that, that I think you're going to warp their mind letting them interact with that thing, even if you control everything that's on it.
I don't know, man. I think if it's air-gapped, you're pretty good. Make them work for it.
Yeah, Cycros makes a good point. Give them a fucking Raspberry. I'm seeing the chat go by there. Don't let it connect to the internet. And that's actually probably a good answer.
Really. I was just thinking, like, are there any devices out there that you can buy that doesn't have Wi-Fi? And really, it's like the Raspberry Pi, and that's about it.
Actually, the new Raspberry A, I got one, or not A, Zero.
Z? Yeah, Zero.
The Zero. I actually got mine in yesterday. Played with it a little bit. It's basically a Raspberry 1 on a little board, but it only has one USB port and no Ethernet. So to do anything with it beyond using it as basically a way overpowered Arduino, you need a USB hub hooked up to an OTG cable. And that's okay. I mean, that's fine. But, you know, the whole idea that it's a $5 computer is kind of right out when... you know, you need about $20 worth of adapters to hook it up to anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're not buying it because it's $5. You might buy 5 of them because they're $5 and then give them to your kids because you know they're going to break 2 of them. And then you have the little dock you put together so they can hook it up. But yeah, with that guy, there'd not be an easy way to hook up internet because you just hook the keyboard and mouse up to the port on it, not give them a USB hub. Yeah, actually, that'd be a good use for it, because it doesn't have any built-in networking.
Or so just go in and uninstall the Wi-Fi drivers.
Yeah.
But
One slight problem you're going to have with that, elementary schools are pushing that students do their internet on their websites and web applications, or do their homework on websites and web applications now.
And your child can do that on the supervised, you know, time. With the parents sitting over them while they're on a real computer.
Exactly. Like, let's face it, if you are going to be a responsible individual raising a fucking, shit stain that's going to cost you a fucking $1.5 million by the time it's 18, you know, at least try and fucking make it decent. You know? So, you're investing enough time, money, and energy. Let's try and make it decent.
It's really depressed
me now.
Actually, I kind of like the idea of hanging onto a Commodore 64 to give to your kids. It's like, yeah, here's your 8-bit computer from the 80s.
When you learn how to use it, you graduate to the next level.
That's actually not a bad idea.
What, then you get the Amstrad? And then the Apple first one? Apple with a scanner on it? Like, then when we going up to what? Like fucking...
Tandy 1000?
Yeah, and then you're... You know, leap forward, the kid's 22 and he gets his first fucking IBM.
Okay, you're not ramping up as quickly as I would assume. But
I'm assuming my child would be retarded.
Fair enough. But by the time that kid got up to a Windows 2000 machine, they would know how it fucking worked.
Yeah, and 2068 fucking Windows 10, yes! Dad, I made it!
Standing over his father's grave, finally holding a modern laptop. I made it, Dad. I made it.
Porn on computer, Dad. Why?
So, Adobe is actively telling people to stop using Flash.
Big shocker there.
Well, I'm sure that they're tired of keeping the damn thing up to date. But I mean, even Adobe is telling people not to use it anymore. The story I have is from The Verge, but Adobe has released an announcement saying that we'll now encourage content creators to build with new web standards such as HTML5 rather than Flash. And it's actually dropping the Flash name from, well, I guess, the application that was called Flash Author. And it's now called Animate CC as opposed to Flash Professional. Because they're saying you can take anything you make in it and drop it out as HTML5 as well as Flash. So, you know, Adobe says they're not getting rid of Flash because too many people still use it, but even they're trying to push to get away from it.
But
the way you push people to get away from it, you get rid of it. Take it off Adobe's website. Say, guys, sorry, move to something else now.
It's gone from tablets and mobiles, and that killed a lot of it right there. That's why YouTube supports HTML5. It's just for fucking iPads.
Well, pretty much everything supports HTML5 now. Like, this is kind of relevant to me because, like, on a whim last week, I uninstalled Flash from my computer just to see how the internet behaved. And to be completely honest, I haven't really noticed any difference. Like, using sites like PrimeWire, not really any problems. I'd say maybe like 10% of the video links on there don't work, which is nothing. It's always like the no-name video hosts and stuff like that are still using it. Same thing with like porn sites and stuff like that. I'd say probably about 5-10% of the porn sites still use Flash, and even most of those give you the option to switch over to an HTML5 viewer.
I don't know, man. I go to some pretty fucked up porn sites.
So, like, for the most part, I really don't see any need for it. I'd say, like, my internet browsing activity has not changed at all after uninstalling Flash.
Well, I mean, the more people who finally do it, or in this case, just forget to install it in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Cycros is telling us that most porn sites use HTML5 for the mobile user agents. Thank you, Cycros. I'm sure for that on field reporting there. I find it amusing that even Adobe at this point is like, yeah, guys, it's not the 90s anymore. Well, can we get rid of this thing?
It's probably like the Windows XP fiasco. You know, they've been done. Like, I seem to remember Adobe's been kind of pretty much done with Flash for quite a long time. But, you know, people keep using it.
Well, I mean, it's pretty much just been security patches at this point.
Yeah.
And so they won't be doing any more updates for it or patching.
Well, I think Google actually makes their own version for Chrome now because Adobe's was so full of issues. Yeah, on Chrome it's called Pepper Flash, and it's Google forked it and made their own. I think they had a I think they have an agreement with Adobe on how to do it. But, you know,
yeah, because I'm sure that's not open source.
No, it's not. But there are some open source projects that were around at one point trying to get Flash stuff working on an open platform. I don't know if they're still active.
Seems like most that was a huge waste of effort at this point.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'd like to see Flash go away from a security standpoint, but you know, you get that one site that needs it, and you reinstall it, and there it is again.
Like, is that one site necessary for my job? And can I call them and tell them to use something else?
I have had a couple that were... I have websites that I have to support people who have to use Internet Explorer 6. Thank you, government websites.
You know, to be fair, I'd say a large number of enterprise systems require Internet Explorer. I actually ran into that myself the other day. I was trying to set up a wiki for, like, an internal wiki. And just, like, setting things up for linking to files on internal file shares. Try doing that with Firefox without a plugin. Not going to happen. Firefox is too locked down. But Internet Explorer, thankfully, doesn't have nearly as extreme security restrictions. So it's quite easy to do links to local files with the internal wiki that way.
You know, it does. That does remind me. Years ago, I set up a private World of Warcraft server for a LAN party. And, you know, wrapped up a hacked client that would connect to that, you know, private WoW server. And so I'm sure this has been probably 10 years now, so hopefully it's past statute of limitations. But I'm sure somebody at Blizzard is like, sue him! But I'm sure their lawyers all talk just like that. High-pitched and nasally. But, yeah, we set that up, and we tried to wrap up the client so you could get it through a web browser, web page, because you had to go on a web page and set up an account. And we found ourselves in a very interesting situation. You could not download the file through Firefox because it was too big. It was like 6 gig. But you could not use Internet Explorer to register for your account. So we had to put on the page, register for your account in Firefox, then come back here in Internet Explorer to download the client if you need it. It was one of those fucked up things you do at a LAN party to just make it go. But, I should know better than to do this.
Is that the server where once you spawned into a zone, everything agged on you?
But that was the server where we, I like those pictures, are you? That's awesome. That's what I imagine our listeners look like.
Yeah, me too. That's why I posted it.
That is the server where we took Onyxia, dropped her in one of the starter towns, and made her look like a large rabbit. That's also the server where we figured out we could change the model assigned to player characters. So, but it wouldn't change the skin, so those were some very fucked up looking characters running around that game. It's like it was amazing. The skin of a night elf running around on the body of an orc. It was like, what the fuck, man?
You know some interracial breeding was going to happen with them being on the planet that long.
Especially with those sexy night elves.
Well, I'm sure you guys go to the websites that still use Flash and can tell me about it. So. Oh, shit. So this next one is from DSL Reports. Last August, New Jersey took a bit of a hit, or took a lot of heat for letting Verizon off the hook from a 1993 requirement that required the company to, provided the company with subsidies and tax cuts in exchange to promising to wire all of the state with 45 megabit or megabyte per sec, or no, I'm sorry, megabit per second fixed line broadband by 2010. Similar Verizon promises in Pennsylvania. Those deployments never happened, and Verizon is now backing away from DSL, refusing in markets it refuses to upgrade. Annoyed by the state's decision to let Verizon's obligations slide, and not to mention the latter's decision to kill consumer protections at Verizon's behest, 16 municipals, or I can't speak, too much 151, 16 municipalities. From four counties in South Jersey, have filed a petition with the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities to prevent Verizon from abandoning its copper plain old telephone service and DSL's customers in the state. As elsewhere, they argue Verizon's plan to offer good enough wireless service wasn't good enough. So basically what's happened here is Verizon cut a deal with the state of New Jersey. And the deal was in 1993... that they would get a chunk of the tax revenue to build out their wired infrastructure. They never did it. They got I'm sure they got the money, but they never actually did it, and the state basically let them off the hook for it. So now you've got these smaller towns that are suing them, and Verizon's answer is, you can use our wireless. That's good enough. Which, of course, you know, DSL versus wireless, anybody who's got crappy cell phone service knows that's not really fair. So, where was it? I've lost the part in the article. Oh, here we go. Additionally, we believe that Verizon has manipulated the complaint process so that its customer complaint records do not represent the seriousness of the issue. Verizon has maintained its customer complaint records such to an extent that underreporting has occurred, and moreover, that reported incidents of several of service problems have not been appropriately maintained or compiled. Stated that. Some South Jersey state lawmaker that'll. Verizon's response so far has been to effectively deny the indisputable claim of backing away from copper networks and insist that critics are simply afraid of the future. So, I'm talking about it because basically the state is letting... They gave Verizon a monopoly, right? And then Verizon did not even live up to their own agreement with the state, and yet the state still lets them off the hook.
And that's when a ballsy mayor should step in. Say, hey, we're fining you so many dollars a day.
It's like one of these things where it's like, if you're going to give a company a monopoly, you should at least ensure they're going to live up to it. I mean, it's bad enough to give them a state issue monopoly, but to give them a state issue monopoly and then not even hold them accountable for it, I mean, holy shit.
Yeah.
People wonder why our internet in the states sucks.
The fixes no one's going to do. Just deregulate and let anyone who wants to open up an internet provider open one up.
Yeah. Nope. Nobody's disagreeing with you.
And also, mute board of directions for Comcast and Verizon.
Yeah, we're just going to blame Comcast for that, too. I like it. It's like, Verizon's being terrible, so we're also going to, you know, blame the board of Comcast. I love it.
And can anyone tell me if we were to douse them all with gasoline and set them on fire, if anything of value would be lost?
It depends. How quick are you with the marshmallows? Because if they go out before you cook a couple, that's kind of wasting fuel.
Well, I was going to go with the only thing of value that was lost is the gasoline that I'm burning. People! The people, though.
Yeah. So this next one up is from a Rum Supply. Rum.supply is actually the website, Blizzard HQ. Security advisory, Dell Foundation Services remote information disclosure. So anybody who doesn't work in a corporate office may not be aware of it, but Dell sells software around managing there are workstations and servers. One of them is called the Dell Foundation Services. And I love this service advisory because it's hilarious. Dell Foundation Services, otherwise known by its internal name of Tribbles, provides a core set of foundational services facilitating customer serviceability, messaging, and support issue functions. It's remote management. So if you have a company of a million desktops, like you've got a million employees and all of them have computers, and so you can have a server that's managing these systems as opposed to having to send IT dweebs out to every single one and put their hands on every single keyboard to fix a problem.
Is it born pregnant?
I don't know. I don't know why you would name it Tribbles, but
because they're a Trekkie.
Well,
same reason I know what the reference is.
Yeah, that's
there
not
should
what I
be
meant.
Some sort of relation.
So Dell Foundation Services starts at HTTPD that listens on 779. The previous service tag leak was fixed by removing the JSONP API. For anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, it means everyone's desktop has a little web server on it, and you could pull information from it.
Ooh.
The web service in question is still available, just now as a SOAP service, so different protocol, that's all. It used to be JSON, now it's SOAP. Again, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's just different ways of talking to the service. All the methods that web service can be accessed, not just the service tag method. So it used to be you could use a API to pull the service tag off any machine, whether or not you had any authentication to do it. If you could talk to that machine, you could pull its service tag. One of the methods accessible is list WMI management item, get WMI collection, string WMI query. If anybody knows anything about Active Directory, they're probably going, oh, fuck, right now. If you don't, if you're going, what the fuck is this? Windows Management Instrumentation. It's basically, you can pull damn near any information off the machine about the hardware, what software is on it, what's running right now, hard disks, file system metadata. You can do a lot with WMyQueries. You can see who's signed in. You can see those little info screens you see on all the management software that tells you everything about a machine. WMI is how it pulls it. It doesn't let you really... It won't let you, like, run anything. So, like, I can't just use a WMI query and get your machine to run code. But I can do a WMI query, then call up that person or shoot them a message on the phone or on their machine and say, "Hi, I'm tech support. I see you're running such and such software. I see you're running this and this and this. My name is Bob from Microsoft, and I see you have a virus." I mean, I don't know. I just, you know, whatever the...
You know what, Bob? Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, no shit, right? But pretty much what this means is if your company is running Dell Foundation Services, your machines are wide fucking open for info disclosure. You're not going to be getting a virus from it, but you're going to get people calling up if they know what they're doing and knowing everything about your company.
Or everything about your customers.
Not necessarily. I mean, you're not pulling data from the hard disk, but... You know, you're going to pull enough information that you could fool whoever you're working for, or whoever they're working for or calling, into thinking that you are in their IT department because you will know everything about their machine. And apparently, according to this vulnerability, there are many potentially vulnerable hosts on Shodan, which means they're all over the frickin' internet. Oh, shit. All right, next one.
I like how their solution is uninstall the software. That is the only solution.
That is the solution.
What if you've already paid for the service? Are they going to do a refund?
No.
Yep.
No, fuck you.
but you compromised my business with the service.
Not what
that you
were paying
me
for.
Yeah, man, take works, six right? puppies and go lie down.
We never claimed this was a security software.
But this software should be secure, even if it's not security software.
You'll get the answer I got from a vendor when I pointed out all the backdoors and problems in their digital signage. Oh, yeah, that really shouldn't be on a publicly or on a shared network. They need to be on their own segmented network so you don't have people screwing with them. Excuse me, your shit's so bad it has to be on its own network? No, but you're not following our implementation guidelines. What implementation guidelines? Your documentation doesn't say shit about putting these things on an air-gapped network. Oh, well, our installers would have told you that at time. It's like, I'm sorry, we all know you're full of shit. You know you're full of shit. I know you're full of shit. And you're now claiming that your security problems are based on my network design. And I'm sure that's what Dell's going to say when you ask him about it. It's like, well, you just shouldn't have these on a publicly accessible network.
What network isn't?
Well, that air gap network we were talking about putting the Commodore 64 and the Raspi on for your kid. If you do that right, it might not be internet accessible.
Okay. Just thinking, what business network isn't at least partially internet accessible? I mean, you might have the gateways locked down, but it's still talking to another computer somewhere.
Depends on the business. If you think about it, if you have, I don't know, a widget factory, I'd imagine most of the computers in that factory do not need to be connected to the internet. They just need to be able to run an inventory program, or the program that runs the machine that punches out the part they're making, or, you know, internal email. They probably don't really need to hit the internet. Most places, you know, they only have a handful of departments that actually need to hit the internet, say sales and marketing. Usually they give everybody else internet access as a human resources courtesy, because you'd have everybody so pissed that they have a computer and no internet access that that'd be a bigger problem than the time lost to people reading up on Facebook. I actively argued at one point to block Facebook on a college campus. And it was explained to me that whereas they agreed completely with my assessment, the problem that the security problem that Facebook posed to the people on campus, that they didn't want to be lynched or burned at the stake. And they're pretty sure that's what would have happened to the mob gathered outside the office if we actually blocked Facebook.
But this is just for your employees. They lived in a world before Facebook.
Oh, no, no, no. You misunderstood. I wanted to block Facebook for the campus.
Oh, so the students.
Everybody.
The students should have their own network, and it shouldn't just talk to, I don't know, the billing department for your college.
We're not even going to go into that one.
Yeah, the students could just have their own network, and it could be crawling with everything, and you would have the business aspect segmented away, and that thing would be secure as fuck, and they don't need Facebook.
Cykros, I see what you've said in chat. I'm just going to say, I am okay being an internet supervillain. People get really mad at me at work with some of my suggestions, and you know, I look at them like, and? It's like, I don't like this. I'm really mad. You're upsetting me. Not an argument.
What am I doing that injures our business? Because I can tell you what you're doing that's injuring our business.
That's basically the argument. So next
would you like me to teach you how to get Facebook on your phone?
So next up is from letsencrypt.org. Let's Encrypt is entering public beta. Now, I've talked about Let's Encrypt before. What it is it's a service that's sponsored, quote-unquote, by several big-name technology companies. Cisco, Mozilla. Oh, hell, I can do the sponsors. I can see who else sponsoring this thing. It's a long-ass list. Akamai, EFF, Facebook, Shopify, Identrust, the Internet Society, whatever that is. Those are some of the big names on there. But yeah, Cisco and Mozilla are platinum sponsors of this thing. That should tell you something. But pretty much, the concept behind Let's Encrypt is that they will give you an SSL certificate for your website for free. And you run their client on your server, and it automatically manages your SSL certificate, so you don't have to worry about it expiring, you don't have to worry about it being compromised, you don't have to worry about it not using the latest hashing algorithm. So it's an interesting concept. The only problem I have with it is it negates half of the function of SSL. Well, TLS, if you want to be really technical, but everybody still calls it SSL. So I guess I should explain this a little bit better. So your HTTPS or SSL certificate, the thing that means that you can have the little S and the lock in the URL bar of your browser. Everybody with me so far?
Yes.
That certificate performs two functions. The first function is it is half of a public-private key encryption algorithm set. It's the public key, and then the server holds the private key. So anything I encrypt with the public key, I can send to the server, and only that server can decrypt it. Anything the server sends out encrypted with the public key, or with the private key, anybody can decrypt because everybody has the public key, but only that server could have sent it. That's the identity portion of the SSL certificate. The other portion of that certificate is it uses the first part to establish a one-time keys for the encrypted tunnel that you set up between you and the server. So, because the certificates are free, I don't think they're doing any kind of major identity verification. Usually that's done by the fact that you pay for the damn thing, right? You can prove right. You own the domain because you buy the cert. And, so there's a name, usually on a credit card, attached to a certificate. That's most of the verification. Now, to be fair, anybody can go buy a cert, but if you don't control the domain in question, it's a little bit difficult. And most reputable certificate providers will check and make sure that that domain doesn't already have a certificate issued to it. But I digress. Anyways, So half of SSL is identity. You're proving that, yes, I'm really your bank. It's okay to log in. And then the other half is using the encryption to set up the encrypted tunnel so that, you know, you're, you know, not everybody can see your password, only the server can. I don't know if I've explained that very well. You at least, Madman, could you at least roughly follow what I was on about there?
Yes. Now, what so, half does this service negate?
The identity.
The identity?
Because if it's free, how can I prove that I'm really who I say I am if it's nothing more than a name I plug into Let's Encrypt?
The service that's providing free certificate needs to do name verification as part of giving you a free certificate.
Well, they need
free
to
doesn't
do
mean they don't check.
Well, they need
like,
to do
how
something.
How do you verify if you're not giving any payment information?
If you're a business, here is my state tax ID number.
Right, or you could do something along the lines of, you know, put a text record in your domain that we give you that proves you can. That. The hell? Madman, keep going. I'll be back in a second.
I think he's
hey,
cat.
Madman, you
like,
are the, now the host.
Something. Yeah, apparently, Madman.
I don't have the show notes because he doesn't do those anymore. But ways that you could verify, if it's a business, it would be a tax ID number. Businesses are issued those in the states by both the state and the federal government. As for an individual, I'm not sure how an individual do it because the only way I could think of they were doing it before is through payment verification. Because I'm not going to give somebody my social.
I guess, you know, you could give them a credit card, they could charge a buck and then refund it or something like that. But, you know, then, like, that costs them money to do.
They might not even need to charge the actual buck. They could put a hold on a certain amount of money in your account for 24 hours.
Yeah, that should work. I don't think they charge you for that, do they?
So that was strange.
What was she naked and hot?
No, and no, he wasn't. It was a cop that they're going door to door trying to make contact with the neighbors. He said, "Nothing's going on. Don't worry about it."
that means
just checking if you're alive in there. Don't worry, nothing's happening. Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. Move along.
That's basically what it was.
Here's what that means. There's a meth dealer in your apartment complex, and they're looking for him.
Because the first dude to slam the door and run is the guy they're looking for.
I'm going to go check my 45 right after the show. Anyways, great. Anyways, I'm not saying Let's Encrypt is bad. I'm really not making that point. I don't have any idea what you guys talked about when I was talking to the police. But
we were discussing ways you could try to verify.
Yeah.
I was
thinking,
at least I wasn't arrested on air, right?
No, you would have been arrested off air, and we might have waited for you for a few minutes.
Man, like, at least you didn't flash your hard drives.
You hear TeamSpeak on mute, and you just hear your Madman, Code Albatross, go! Madman's sitting there going, I don't know what that fucking means, man.
Grab the cash, whatever.
I'm going to get arrested.
Run.
It either means I'm supposed to wipe out his internet history, or he's screwing with the cops. I don't know which. So,
just wipe his computer just to be safe.
Yeah,
but
at least
I'm not
he's in a history.
Yeah, it's. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that if a site has a Let's Encrypt and they're claiming to be a bank, I'm not sure I trust it. If a site is anything more than some little hobby site and it's got one of these Let's Encrypt certificates, I don't know, man. I mean,
even a hobby site, if they're selling something.
Well, really, like, you know, if you're running a business, like, certificates are not that expensive.
No, they're like $8.
Yeah, so, like, really, anybody who's running a business should have an actual certificate. Really, like, the only people I could see this being applicable to are, like, you know, hobbyists, individuals, like, you know, somebody who's, like, putting their, like, photos up on the internet, or, you know, like a photographer or something like that, like somebody who's not really making a lot of money, sure, that's a great service.
I mean, okay, what if I was to activate this Let's Encrypt service on Galaxy 50?
Yeah, I see no problems with that.
I do.
Honestly, what are the people that are hitting our site going to be giving that we could be using, or that would be needing to be secured?
The fact that they are hitting our site. But, I don't let anybody log in. We don't have a comment system or a forum system or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, but that those are all very purposeful choices that I've made. But the thing that bothers me, and I guess I probably didn't make this clear, is to use Let's Encrypt, you install their client on your server, and then their client manages their certificate for you. So to use their SSL certificate, you're not just installing a bit of key data and a link back to a certificate provider. You're installing code on your server.
So the issue isn't what are we going to do to our customers, it's what are they going to do to our customers.
Well, my concern is, okay, yes, Let's Encrypt may in fact be encryption on the wire, but if you have the FBI or the NSA show up at the Let's Encrypt office and say, we need to see the traffic, we need to be able to decrypt traffic going to this website, and you hold the cert. Now, granted, that could happen to any certificate provider, but if you have a actual agreement with them because you've done business with them, that's a little bit more involved than this Let's Encrypt, which is a free service, which is probably just has a basic privacy agreement. So,
and that's how many businesses do you think have actually stood up to the FBI when they walked in and said, "Hi, we need to get the information that you've been sharing over your server"?
If they don't flash zero. If they don't flash an NSL, a national security letter, most of them will ask for a warrant. And it's not out of any loyalty to their customers. It's about legally covering their own ass so they don't get sued later. But most businesses will, in fact, ask for that warrant. And it's because their lawyer asks for it.
Well, the national security letter, I don't even think you need to go to a judge for that anymore.
No, a national security letter, I have no idea what the actual laws are around them, but the way they're written, if you even go to the judge to try to ask, you're violating the national security letter.
You get that through the FISA courts, don't you?
Yeah.
And because we're not allowed to know how they work. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go over here for a while.
I guess the point I'm making about Let's Encrypt is it's not that it's a bad service. I just wouldn't trust it with your most intimate secrets.
So celebrities get it.
Oh, shit. All right, next story up is from Ars Technica. Windows Server 2016 is making an interesting move as far as their licensing goes. They're going off the IBM and the Oracle model. And that is that a server license will support, you'll be licensed by core, by processor core, not by machine.
So if I have a dual core processor in my server, I need two licenses.
No, it actually comes with licenses for two cores. If you have a quad core, however, you need to buy additional core licenses.
What? But, like, isn't like pretty much everything more than two cores nowadays?
I'm sorry. Let me read the exact text of the article here. The licensing moves to a per core model. Instead of 2012's two socket license pack, 2016 will use a two core pack, with the license cost of each 2016 pack being 1/8 the price of the corresponding two core pack or two socket pack for 2012. Each system running Windows Server 2016 must have a minimum of 8 cores or packs per processor, and a minimum of 16 cores, 8 packs per system. For systems with 4 processors and up to 8 cores per processor, this doesn't change the overall licensing cost. So in other words, they've adjusted it for what the standard server CPU is, which is about 8 cores. But But above this, things get more expensive. Although the price for a single processor 10-core system will remain the same, with two or more sockets populated by 10-core processors, the price will go up to two. Will go up. So what they've done is they've pegged the price such that small servers might be, well, no, they won't be cheaper because the standard license is going to come with support for so many cores. But if you have a massive 32-core system, or worse, you have something like Intel's Hypervisor or what's that called? Where each processor looks like two cores?
I don't know.
I'm blanking on what it's called. Hyper-V. No, Hyper-V is virtualization. Shit. Well, hell. Hyper-threading. Psychros in the chat room. Thank you. So, hyper-threading makes each logical core, or makes each core look like cores. So, what's that going to do? I'm hoping their software's smart enough for this. But the thing to think about is not how many cores does your processor today have. It's how many cores is your processor two years from now going to have. Because these things have been basically doubling every year. Excuse me.
Well, I'm sure that's exactly why they did it. Like, you just look at the trends. They're like, hey, okay, sure, we're going to make about the same amount of money this year. In 5 years, we're going to be making four times as much money.
So, anyways, it's nuts.
Per machine seems reasonable to me. And actually, I don't even want licensing. I want to buy your fucking product, and then it's going to be mine.
See, they're not going to sell you that. They don't want that. They want to control the licensing so that they can come around every year and, you know, demand money from you because you use their software. Why do you think Microsoft is one of the richest companies in the world?
Because they murder puppies.
I'm sure they have to get the blood to sacrifice over laser jet printers somehow. So, time to move on to this.
I own things. That's my big problem with the digital economy. I don't own most of the games I purchase. That's fucked up. If I die, unless you guys have, like, my Steam account, everything I've purchased goes away. I own this stuff. It has value. I paid money for it. It should be mine. If I buy software, it should be mine. That's why I don't think I'm going to buy software. That's the only reason I think I'm good with piracy. They don't want to protect my property rights. I don't give a fuck if they make money.
Yeah, see, the company cares if they make money, though, so... I don't know. I agree with you. I just...
They can only push us so far.
Anyways,
you want piracy? This is how you get piracy.
And this ants. This piracy. Is also how you get ants.
Ants and pirates. Yo! Hadouken!
So, got two things up for Digital Dojo tonight. First one up, Root Shell has a nice tutorial. It's not even all that old. On using Kali Linux to crack WPA2. Talks about replay attacks, flat-out cracking, and dictionary attacks. So you got to have the right kind of Wi-Fi card because you need to be able to do packet injection. But it's got all the commands, cut and paste, nice screenshots, walks you through the whole process of how to actually crack Wi-Fi. And the reason I think this kind of stuff's important is so that when you hear people on TV bullshitting about this, you can actually have an idea of how it's actually done. And if you have an idea of how it's actually done, one, even if you've never actually done it, you can still... Imagine how empty my last couple of sentences would have been without the word actually. But if you've done it, or you've at least read on how to crack Wi-Fi, when you see bullshit on a TV show, you can call it out for what it is. You know, it's sort of like when you saw John Connor in Terminator 2 sitting there hacking some guy's PIN number, and it was coming up one number at a time. It's like, it don't work like that. None of this works like that.
Mr. Robot was pretty accurate.
I've only watched about half of it, actually. I have a hard time watching that show. I really
too realistic. You can't feel that sense of self superiority while watching it.
That might be it. They're watching it. It's like, oh fuck, they got cameras in my house. Yeah, Mr. Robot was pretty accurate though. I mean, they showed real desktops. A little over-dramatized, and some of the commands are kind of bullshit, but...
They had to, but it was just as boring as real-life hacking.
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally, to close out tonight, Spybot has put out a fantastic tool for Windows 10 called AntiBeacon. Now... I've talked about some of these tools that go in and turn off all the tracking in Windows before. Most of you got to be careful with those because a lot of them have malware in it. Spybot actually has a really good reputation right now. Their tool has not always been the best for getting malware off, but it's decent. They try. And their little tool here does a couple of things that are really nice and a couple of things that don't really work. Things it does that are really nice is it actually turns the service that manages the customer connected experience or whatever it is, but the service that collects your keys on Windows 10 and ships it off to Microsoft, turns it off. But, and this is the really nice part, it reruns every time you reboot the machine to make sure the shit stays off. That's cool. What I like about this tool. It also, you can also go in and add a bunch of entries to the host file, but extensive testing has proven that Microsoft software mostly ignores the host file anymore. Like, no word of a lie. Go on Windows 10, open Edge, go edit your Etsy host file and tell it Bing's IP address, or tell it Bing.com goes to, say, Google's IP address or something. You will still get to Bing.com through Edge. So I have no reason to believe that adding crap to the host's file does anything to stop the Microsoft tracking. But a lot of the other settings that Spybot does, or AntiBeacon does, I'm actually comfortable running Windows 10 again with this tool run.
Nice.
So
are you less gung-ho about going straight Linux?
I've been trying to go gung-ho. I've been trying to do straight Linux the past couple of weeks because I know I talked about doing a YouTube channel on it, and I still want to. But I've discovered I've got too much shit that just doesn't work. Like earlier when I was trying to clip out this thing.
Zionist media controlled Vice News.
Okay.
Give him an inch, he takes a fucking mile.
Mile and a half. But the thing with that is I'm using that as an example because when I pulled that out, I actually had to log out of TeamSpeak, kill Team Viewer, and unplug and replug in my sound card before I could get the sound editing software to work correctly. Because apparently Pulse Audio is still a bag of dicks on Linux. So I thought they had most of that stuff fixed, but not so much. Wow, are you? I like the little cartoon characters. That's funny. But,
I thought it was cute.
Anyways, so I'm going to be... Cycross, I have used Jack. I just haven't set it up on the system. And Jack is fantastic, which is one of the... Last time I used Linux, I had gone through the trouble of getting Jack all set up, which is why I thought most of the sound card crap was fixed. Turns out I was wrong. and you want Slackware. Wait a minute. Well, he's not telling me to run Gentoo, at least, right? So... Or Arch. But I'm not gonna go 100% Linux, but I'd like to keep it at least 75%. And I'm gonna be still gonna do some of the YouTube stuff that I've been talking about, just from the perspective of obviously we're not gonna make it 100%, but we're going to get as close as we possibly can and still be able to participate in things. I could go 100% Linux right now if I never wanted to play games and gave up on some of my audio stuff. Which
I'm still hoping Beam will fix that problem.
they're pushing hard. And I tell you what, the Steam in-home streaming from a Windows box works great. And a lot of the Linux games I tried through Steam work fine. So what I'm probably going to end up doing is moving my main rig back downstairs, because I actually moved it upstairs to try to force myself to only use the Linux boxes. And it worked fine, don't get me wrong. But Cycros, I tried to do the pass-through VM thing. I really did. And I ran into a very interesting problem. The video card I was trying to pass through was a Radeon. My processor is an AMD. Everything should work, but when I started doing the blacklisting modules so that Linux would not grab the Radeon so I could pass it to the VM, it started disabling parts of my processor. Things got weird, man. Things got weird. But I'm still working on it. I'm still going to be trying to push it. But I'm going to come up with some other ideas that I've got and, of course, document those. But yeah, this SpyBot tool does have me going, okay, I can run Windows 10. I'm still going to have Linux in a VM, and that's how I'm going to be doing a lot of my web work. But and I'll probably be doing it well. I'll figure it out. But yeah, it's not that I've not been wanting to make the YouTube videos. I've been trying to do the research to do it properly. And been running it. Which is really too bad, because it's like 90% there. What's killing me is I'm trying to do stuff that's less mainstream. So, well, gaming's pretty mainstream. Even that's pretty close to working. Anyways, that's all I've got. Anybody got anything they want to throw out before we close out the show?
Nope, I think that's about done.
I'm going to be quiet until we're all fed.
Truth bomb alert.